The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Solnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition. This show will be an extension on last week's show. We didn't quite get fully through discussing the topic from last week. Last week's show was based on an email question, actually, from a listener. So it was a kind of an extended answer to a question that was appropriate for an EDU show rather than our Q&A show. On this one, Jim can kind of fill in the blanks because he's got the email in front of him. But basically, we had someone contact us who was experiencing some advice from their financial advisor that was an asset manager, and they had run kind of some projections and given them some Monte Carlo statistics about the likelihood that their retirement would be, quote, successful or not fail, I guess would be one way of describing it. And he was proposing a certain asset allocation, but he had heard us talk about positioning assets for spending in retirement, and it sounded like to him that this listener that our situation was a lot more detailed and complicated than what this advisor was talking to him about. And he was curious about why that was and why his advisor was taking the approach that he was. And last time we explained that his approach from that financial advisor is very common in the industry. It's a very plain vanilla, pretty straightforward approach that's accepted by most because it's easy to deploy. It's easy to automate. It's easy to scale. As advisors bring on more and more assets, they can scale things quite easily with that approach because they aren't adding much complexity to it as far as management of the assets. What we didn't quite get into that we're going to dive into today is what if you wanted to embrace the dedicating assets to certain purposes so that you can enhance your ability to spend on fun, which is kind of the essence of our philosophy here. How might you position those assets and how would you manage things that would be different than just an overall portfolio of a certain allocation like this financial advisor was recommending to this listener? So kind of an extended explanation. Jim can fill in the blanks where he thinks maybe I missed a few things, but I've got Jim on the phone remotely, so he'll be in his phone voice for this. But Jim, what did I miss in my recap there?
I think you did pretty good. I was impressed because I do have the email here. You don't have it. You didn't mention that he was from humid Houston, as he put it. And you told us your horrendous story as a kid being driven through Houston on the way to Florida.
Sure, I was trying to put that out of my mind again.
But no, you did a good summary. In short, folks, you can listen to last week's EDU show. Chris and I don't want to rehash it, but Chris had a pretty good summary. It was just a listener whose advisor was doing more of a probability statistic using a 4% annual withdrawal from this gentleman's portfolio. the gentleman was concerned because he felt he wanted to spend more money, at least earlier in retirement, I would assume ostensibly on fun things, or what Chris and I call fun things, and that limiting him to just a quote-unquote safe withdrawal rate of 4% was going to unnecessarily curtail his spending, and he didn't like that. And I think he got a lot of the ideas for that from our podcast. This is an approach that Chris and I have. I'm not saying that Chris and I are unique and we're the only advisors out there who have this approach. In fact, some very good research people in our industry, Dave Blanchett from Morningstar is probably the one that comes to mind the most. But even Kitsis, to a degree, with his recent analysis and how he looks at the amount of equities in a portfolio and how he is a little different than our approach, but even Kitsis is warming up to it, but especially Blanchett and Fowle. Fowle came out recently and said one of the problems with a safe withdrawal rate is it unnecessarily curtails spending on what Chris and I call fun things. I don't think Blanchett and Fowle word it as fun
no.
things.
No, they talk about it mostly just as spending early in retirement. And for us, we talk about it as fun, just to clarify why we speak the language we do for people. You don't really splurge on minimum dignity floor. It is what it is. You know, it's your basic living for medical and housing and food, etc. It's not like you're going to necessarily increase that consciously during the go-go phase, the early in retirement. The discretionary part where you would throw more money at it, if you will, is the fun, is the discretionary desired expenses. So in our mind, we always talk about it as splurging on fun. And that's because of what I just mentioned. It's not, you don't really splurge or weight more heavily your minimum dignity floor expenses. They just are what they are. So
yeah,
just,
you don't stay kinda, early yeah. in retirement. Gee, in a hot summer day here in humid Houston, I'm just retiring. I'm going to set my thermostat at 68 instead of 73. But when I'm older, it'll right. be at 73.
Right.
I mean, we don't do that with what we call minimum dignity floor items. Plus, Chris, we believe in protecting your minimum dignity floor with lifetime guaranteed secure income, as we've gone over ad nauseum on this show. So if your minimum dignity floor expenses are being covered with pension, Social Security, and income annuity, and in the case of early retirement, it may also be covered with essentially a bridge positioning of your assets in what we call the quote-unquote delay period, the period of time between retirement and when all the delayed secure income is being withheld so you can get more secure income later. In other words, waiting to 70 to claim Social Security, maybe waiting to a certain age to claim an income annuity if you have one, or a pension. During that delay period, you're going to cover any shortage in minimum dignity floor expenses with a reserve pool of very safe assets, which is what we're going to get into today. You're going to position that spending. Because remember, folks, stop looking at your assets. All you do-it-yourself or Vanguardians out there, stop looking at all your retirement money as assets and stop patting yourself on the back on how much you grew. You've done a great job. You wouldn't be listening to this podcast. You probably have amassed somewhere between 1 and 4 million in what you call assets. But Chris and I call it deferred spending because that's what it is. You amassed it to spend it. You didn't amass it just to look at it.
And if not you, someone else is going to spend it.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to spend it.
I called that challenge out once on this podcast. I said, if you don't believe me that it's deferred spending, take some of it and give it to someone and tell me what they do with it. In fact, give it to your favorite podcast host. And I'll tell you what he or she does with it. But it's deferred spending, folks. As you can tell, I'm contemplating leaving my current advisor and finding a new one. I know Chris teaches financial planning, so I was hoping he could expand on why seemingly intelligent advisors seem to be closed-minded or, dare I say, ignorant when it comes to retirement planning. I have to get this right the first time. I can't go back and do it again. What he's essentially asking, Chris, is why do advisors approach retirement this way? Why is his advisor saying, you're going to be okay, don't worry about it, so long as he doesn't spend more than 4% of his deferred spending? And he's saying, I'm not getting at another point in this, he writes, I can't find it in his email. He wants to be able to spend more earlier. And he wrote, where did he put that?
Well, I think this just boils down to the difference in approach. There's a difference between giving someone advice and confirming for them or telling them that there's a high chance that you'll be okay. There's a difference between answering that question of, will I be okay? Will I make it? Based on these projections, what are the chances of me running out? That could be a valid question. If that's all you want to know, then traditional asset manager approach financial planning for retirement might be adequate for you, if that's your question. If your question is, how can I optimize, get the most out of my retirement? That's when you're talking to us or somebody who's going to look at it a little more deeply, right? Not to say, you know, we're the only people who look at it that way. We're absolutely not. But that's how our process and approach is different than just a standard, oh, yeah, you're looks like you're pretty good, or you're going to have an 80, 90% chance of success, or I hate to say success, I would call it non-failure, if you only take out 4% of your asset balance over time.
Right. You know,
if that's all you're curious about, then maybe that answer is sufficient. But he clearly wants to know more. He wants to know how he can optimize his retirement.
Right. And he writes in the paragraph above the one that I just read, based on what I have learned from your approach, I am worried following this approach, his advisor's 4% withdrawal probability statistic carries too much uncertainty into my retirement, but here's the key that he writes after that, Chris, and may even limit what I should be doing when I first retire in 5 years. My wife and I did not work hard just to restrict our bucket list experiences. And that ties into our belief, especially yours, Chris, because you have said repeatedly, not only on the podcast, but to me on a professional level, that under traditional Monte Carlo, advisors track what they feel is the big risk in retirement, outliving your money. But you have pointed out dying with too much money, I think that's how you put it, is just as bad.
It's ignored and I think needs a lot more attention. And that's what they don't share with you, in that when they say that there's a, you know, your 90% chance of success in the Monte Carlo. I wish this, at this point, I agree with you. I wish the show was visual so I could put up a visual, because I could show this very clearly on a graph, on a Monte Carlo output.
Well, maybe we should do a video show is what you're saying.
We'll see. But I'll try to describe it with words. Essentially, if you know, looked at a timeline graph going left to right, when they say you've got a 90% chance of success, they're looking at all of these, they run hypothetical trajectories. They look at your assets and they run it through all of the simulation, maybe 100 or 1,000 times, and they add variability or volatility to the returns on the portfolio, all the while debiting from the portfolio this assumed 4% rate or whatever they're using for their safe withdrawal rate. And it's telling you, if it's 90% sure that you're not going to fail, that means 90% of the time you don't run out of money. But when you're running these simulations, sometimes in the simulation, it's going to show 30 years of unexpectedly good returns on your portfolio, which sometimes it shows unexpectedly bad. And those are the 10% when you, quote, fail. When you have a series of 30, 35 years of retirement with unexpectedly bad returns on your investment portfolio. That's what, because remember, your withdrawals are consistent. They're applying a consistent. So the only variability in all of these scenarios that they're running is the sequence of returns and the size of those returns. And so they're saying 10% of the time you run out of money, and that's what you should be concerned about. But it's only a 10% chance, so we think you're pretty good. You know, we think you're going to be, quote, okay. Well, my first question is, what does my life look like 10% of the time? You know, if I'm going to, quote, fail 10% of the time in your simulations, what does my life look like at that point? Am I living just on Social Security, or what's the deal? So there's the first question. But my other question is, gee, you told me about the worst 10% of the time. What does my assets projection looks like in the 10% of the best of the outcomes? And in those, the assets are off the charts a lot of times. They're huge, meaning you die with a ton of money. And I'm saying they don't expose you to that because they don't have an answer for that other than, oh, look what you're going to leave behind. Our answer to that is don't. Our approach essentially squashes that distribution. Not to get too technical or geeky in the wording here, but the distribution of outcomes in the Monte Carlo is wide, all the way from failure to ending up with a lot of money and everything in between. And what we propose is squash that down, you know, get the floor up, cover the minimum dignity floor so that the quote fail when you run out of assets is not very catastrophic, not catastrophic at all. You've created this floor for yourself. So that brings up the bottom end of the distribution, and then spend in a way that prevents the huge amassing of assets if things really go your way in the portfolio return category. And one way to do that is to spend it, right? Be more aggressive in your spending, and that's going to suppress the growth. And that's an act that you benefit from. You create memories, you create experiences, you benefit yourself and family members, maybe your family vacations, all that kind of stuff goes into that. But you can't just turn up the dial on that without addressing the negative outcomes, right? You have to solve them simultaneously. We start with solving the floor. Solve the threat of running out, right? Make the threat of running out so inconsequential as to be acceptable. And when I say running out, just of assets that you have discretion over, right? You've got this minimum dignity floor idea, plus any other set-asides that you want to build in. You build in whatever foundation that you feel comfortable with. So now you can ignore the quote fail, right? You can ignore the tail end, the negative tail of those Monte Carlo outputs. Then you go to town on the other end of it. You work that budget on the fun stuff in such a way that you're not going to end up with a ton of money because you're going to spend it as long as you can. You know, sometimes the rug gets pulled out from under you and you don't feel like spending it anymore, or you can't because of a medical issue, or one of the two of you passes away earlier than needed, or something comes up. But the plan is you're going to eat through the rest of that having fun. That's a lot more difficult to put in place than, oh, here my computer tells me that you've got a 90% chance of success, so we're going to call it good to go. Check in with me again next year, and we'll see how things are going. That's why they do it that way, because they can have essentially that conversation. The conversation I just described, far more in depth, a lot more moving parts, takes a lot more effort to put everything in place, but the payoff is, you got to think it's worth it. If you're going to put in this effort, it's got to be worth it. And it's worth it because in our view, you're going to have more control over and optimize your retirement to make it the best it can possibly be.
Exactly. And that's why we do it the way we do it. And for this listener who asked, Chris, you can tell Chris teaches this. Why don't more in the industry do it our way? It is not scalable. I'll talk to you now as a business owner. We look for scalability. Chris giggled. In the office, though, Chris, my position pretty much has evolved, as you know, over the last year and a half. I don't meet much with clients anymore. I can't. I'm too busy running the business. Chris and I have a agreement. He runs upstairs, which is the planning department, and I don't step on your feet at all, do I, Chris? You do what you do up there.
No, we certainly collaborate a lot.
We collaborate, right?
We
absolutely.
Kick things back and forth, but as far as making the wheels turn up here, that's me and the
that's
minions.
You and the minions. And then I control downstairs, essentially, which is the admin staff, the new tax planning practice that we've added over the past few years, and all the headaches of running the business, which Chris joked with me not too long ago, saying he didn't want to do what I'm doing. It's. I remember I told you too, Chris, running a business is a lot more work than being a planner.
I have that in my somewhat distant past and still scars on the brain from that. It's tough. You know, there's benefits, but it's not necessarily fun.
No. And one of the things we struggle with as a firm, listeners, and one of the reasons I control downstairs, Chris controls upstairs. I remember the day I said we're going to stop taking on new clients. It was the last week of January before COVID even hit. It had nothing to do with COVID. And you were upstairs, Chris. And I had talked to the admin staff and told them, this is it. We're not accepting any more clients effective February 1st. And when Chris came down, I told him, we're not going to take on any new planning clients. Why? Financial planning is not what, Chris, from a business standpoint?
It's not easily scalable.
Exactly. When Chris and his minions and his team, and part of the reason we put a pause on, we needed more help. Well, you can imagine two people as detailed orientated as Chris and I, we're not just going to run out and hire anyone. And when we hire them, we have to train them and get them up and running. It's not like we just had to go out, buy a new machinery, plug it in, and start making more widgets. We had to find humans. And then humans that we felt had the knowledge and skill sets we wanted, the ability to teach them, and then start teaching them. And that's why it's taken us a while before Chris is ready to, quote unquote, unpause. But the thing with financial planning, true planning, which is what we do, it is not scalable. But what is scalable is investment management. So taking on more planning clients didn't allow us to make more money. It cost us more money. We had to hire more help. It's very labor intensive and time intensive to do it right. Now, there are software programs out there that market themselves through financial planners that, oh, your team can enter the data in 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 50 minutes, 60 minutes, produce a retirement plan in less than an hour. We see these all the time being pushed in our industry. We wouldn't touch those software programs with a 10-foot pole. They're crap. But that is what a lot of advisors who are trying to run a scalable practice, trying to just bring in assets and charge an asset management fee and roll out this worthless financial plan, they got to be able to do it quickly. But when you do true planning, in our opinion, we're biased, I admit that, but true planning is not scalable. It takes us time. So listener, that's could be, I'm not saying it is, but it could be one of the reasons the firm you have hired to help you, and you, I think you said they had been helping you for 8 years or so by managing your assets. The reason these companies often embrace Monte Carlo safe withdrawal rate projections is they can keep managing your money as one big portfolio and say, okay, you are an 80-20. Or 70-30, or a 60-40, or a 50-50 split between stocks and bonds. You all know how it works. You do it yourselfers. You know how to manage portfolios. So they know the easiest way of doing this is maintain one portfolio, one big portfolio. Now, it may be broken up amongst two or three or four different accounts. We get that. And those accounts may have different tax implications. They may be in an always taxable, maybe taxable, or never taxable portfolio. Very few advisors will actually look at the tax diversification of the portfolios when it comes to withdrawals. Some do, some are very good on it, but a lot of them don't. They just consider it one big portfolio, and then they tell you, well, go see your tax person, figure out your taxes. They're just going to be managing the assets. Well, if you are working with someone like that, it works wonderful during the accumulation phase. When there is no debits coming from that portfolio, that strategy works fine. Now, whether or not the fee is worth it, that's going to be something you have to decide with yourself or with your advisor. But during the accumulation phase, there's no distributions happening. There's no positioning necessary. You're just amassing assets as an advisor, very scalable, because they just bring people on, plug them into their models. And there's nothing wrong with model management. Chris and I manage assets through a model. There's nothing wrong with it. It's very scalable. It's for us, it's very efficient. For AUM advisors, it's very scalable. But you throw true planning into the picture, that's what gums up the machine. That's what slows things down. So the software industry understood this and said, hey, we're going to help these advisors. We're going to allow them to give a quote-unquote financial plan. We're not saying it's going to be an overly accurate plan, but it's suitable. It's realistic. It's okay. We're going to base it off of Monte Carlo and a quote-unquote withdrawal rate from the portfolio. And then you're going to be able to scale that part of your practice as well. You're going to be able to continue gathering assets, and you're going to be able to deliver a retirement plan in less than a couple of hours and send this plan off, but allow yourself to continue managing a portfolio for an allocation as opposed to breaking it all up, which is what I wanted to talk to you guys about today.
Right. And this is what's related to the optimizing your retirement rather than just managing it for non-failure. Managing it for non-failure doesn't take this detailed approach. Optimizing it, making it the best it can be, and applying some common sense, in other words, do with your portfolio and your accounts what's appropriate for what those accounts need to do for you, that's the driving force here. And it does add a lot of complexity, but in our opinion, it leads to better understanding of your situation for yourselves and us, if we're the ones giving you the advice, and hopefully an optimized outcome for yourself so that your retirement isn't just all about non-failure. It's about optimizing. Probably using that word too much today, but it's a good word. Optimize.
Chris, right? Chris likes the word. It's his new favorite word. Okay, this person, I'm reading back through his email. He has about 2.2 million. I'm rounding. I'm not going to read his breakdown. He has a little bit in never taxable, most of it broken up between always and maybe. But follow our logic, listener, who sent us the question, and all listeners. I want to talk to you now about your asset management. If you want the level of detail, or if you believe in the optimized retirement, again, to borrow from an overused word that Chris is mentioning, or if you simply don't want to limit your fund spending to this arbitrary, quote-unquote, safe withdrawal rate, as if the 62-year-old you is going to spend the exact same amount of money on fun as the 92-year-old you. That's where Chris and I have an issue with this. This is the last fun period you're going to have. I'm not trying to bum everyone out. Chris and I aren't that far behind retirement ourselves. We intend to probably work, well, I don't want to speak for Chris, but I intend to work another 9 to 14 years.
Depends on if that lottery ticket comes in for me.
Yeah, it depends, right. If all of a sudden I have a wicked big pause and I'm not taking on any clients, you know Chris won the lottery and he's out of here. But all jokes aside, when I finally do retire and I want to do what I call a jet retirement as opposed to a helicopter retirement. Helicopter, get to the date, and like a helicopter lands and boom, you're retired. I want to do a jet landing retirement or a glider landing retirement. I just want to reduce my hours until I fully stop working and enjoy more personal time. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. What I'm trying to get you guys to understand, as you start entering retirement, if you want to get away from this level on fun and realize in my 60s, I'm going to have health, inclination, desire, and ability to go have fun. Whether that is driving in an RV across the United States, or traveling to Europe, or just going fishing more, or hunting more, or hiking, to borrow from the things I like to do. Whatever it is, you are going to try to do more of them earlier in your retirement. Because let's face it, folks, we're not getting younger, stronger, and healthier. So Chris and I, again, don't believe in this level approach to fun. Instead, we want you to start, quote unquote, positioning your portfolio. Get out of the accumulation mindset, which is what most, unfortunately, asset under management, AUM, investment advisors, not financial planners, investment advisors. They may have a CFP designation, but their business model is investment management, collecting assets, and charging a percentage of whatever their pricing model is to quote-unquote manage it. That business model, that approach, which has embraced, because it's scalable and easy, a flat spending Monte Carlo analysis. Get out of that mindset, you do-it-yourselfers, because that's the mindset you're going to read about everywhere, because that's what everyone in the industry practically does. Stop doing what everyone does. Stop being those lemmings. You ever see those? Remember the 1970s, we had those Wild Kingdom shows? I always remember one of lemmings, and I was devastated when they showed them just running over the cliff, and I couldn't understand, why the hell are these things just all going over the cliff? But that's what they do. I don't know why. Do you ever figure out why lemmings do that? I don't know.
Well, it turns out there was someone behind that whole group chasing them. Kind of behind the scenes at Mutual of Omaha, Wild Kingdom.
So for effect, there were some people from Mutual of Omaha waving blankets and scaring the lemmings.
Oh, they wanted to have an exciting show. I don't know. It's...
Anyways, I always remember the lemming show because they did. They ran over the cliff. Stop doing what everyone does. And if you truly want to, follow a few logical steps when you're managing your deferred spending. So rule number one, folks, if you're managing your quote-unquote assets, stop calling them assets. Start calling it deferred spending. And now when you are in a distribution portfolio, you've got to, what Chris and I now call, position them. We don't call it bucketing anymore. We call it positioning. You're going to start lining those assets up, or deferred spending. You're going to start lining them up. Almost like, remember the I Love Lucy show where her and her friend, I forget what her friend's name was, were
Ethel.
Working in that chocolate factory?
It was Ethel.
Ethel? Okay. Mm-hmm. And remember the chocolate one and the little chocolate candies were coming by and they had to box them and they kept coming by too fast. Anyways, get your spending lined up like Lucy's chocolates on that conveyor belt. That's called positioning. You're not going to have one big ass portfolio anymore, folks, of 60-40, 70-30, 80-20, whatever. That doesn't apply in a distribution portfolio. Go back to this listener. He has about $2.2 million. What needs to happen, what this listener needs to do with his 2.2 million listeners and Chris, is he's got to start divvying that up. Now, Chris and I use the analogy of a big cherry pie, or on Chris's point, a big apple pie, doesn't matter what you do, or chocolate cake with white frosting if it was my dessert of choice. You've got this big $2.2 million cherry pie. You've got to slice some off to protect your minimum dignity floor. And we've talked ad nauseum on how we believe in doing that. Listen to our other podcasts on that. Then you have to ask yourself, you're not at your fun number yet, folks. How much of that $2.2 million can you spend on fun? That's the big question. How much of that can you spend early in retirement with confidence and clarity? How much of that can you spend and not worry? Well, you have to first protect your minimum dignity floor. And maybe you need 300,000 of the 2.2 million to protect your minimum dignity floor along with your Social Security pension and annuity income if you have any annuities. So you don't have 2.2 million anymore in my example. You've got 1.9 million. Now, is that all fun? Can you go have fun with all that and blow it like a drunk sailor on shore leave? Not yet. What you now have to look at, and you need to ask yourself all these questions when you're managing your money, because you have to position this deferred spending to be spent. So the money that you are putting aside for your minimum dignity floor, in my example, it was only 300,000. It might be more than that. Let's raise that, Chris, to 600,000. So out of your 2.2 million, 600,000 needs to go to your minimum dignity floor. But maybe out of that 600,000, Chris, half of it is for the delay period. The period between retirement and when your secure income is at its highest amount. That might be age 70, and maybe you retired at age 60 or 58 or whatever it is. So you need 300,000 positioned for almost immediate spending. So that's going to have to be in what we call a cash sleeve. When we manage our client portfolios, we call it convenience portfolios. Why? You can do it yourself. We know you can do this yourself. But you could hire us or another advisor to do it for you as a convenience. So what we do in our management service is we, if you're in a distribution phase, if you're in accumulation phase, where we charge even less to manage portfolios because we aren't doing any positioning with it, in an accumulation portfolio, you might be an 80-20, 70-30, and we'll help you manage it that way. And it's pretty easy, is it not, Chris? In an accumulation portfolio, you're not taking anything out.
Very straightforward there, yeah.
Yeah. So we charge less on that. But in a distribution portfolio, if this person was working with us and he had 2.2 million, and we're going to put 600,000 for his minimum dignity floor period, and on that, 300 was for the delay period, and 300,000 was for the post-delay period, Chris, and maybe he didn't need that until age 82. In other words, our analysis shows that in the future, maybe in their early 80s, there's going to now be a shortage in their minimum dignity floor because their minimum dignity floor expenses of food, utilities, transportation, housing, and healthcare is growing faster than the cost of living increase on their pension, Social Security, and annuities. It's what Chris has termed a crossover point. Maybe you need, in my simple example, another 300,000 in your 80s. Well, if you're 60 years old today, Chris, and you are squirreling away 300,000 to be spent over the next 10 years, and 300,000 to be spent in 22 years, would those two portfolios be managed the same?
No, and they're not really separate portfolios, but those two little sleeves is what we're kind of calling them, those two buckets, if you will, to use old terminology. We're going to have a lot of buckets here because you're kind of laying out every individual piece. But the point is, you're going to let what the job is for the money determine how it's positioned. So the something for as important as the minimum dignity floor, and in the near term during the delay period, that needs to be safe, liquid, no volatility, cash-like positioning. The 300 that you need for maybe in 20 years, you might be off. You might need it in 15, might not need it till 25, might not need it at all. But you're going to position now to be prepared for needing that down the road. First of all, it's for something very important still, minimum dignity floor. So that's going to drive how you position this. But it's a little different story when you don't need it for 15, 20 years, maybe a little bit more. So you can position that not in cash, right? You're not going to put that in cash, but you're going to treat that bucket different than money in a bucket for fun in 20 years. So I think I've said this before, those slices of pie are going to each get their own kind of risk tolerance portfolio based on what the purpose and the timing. the purpose and the timing of each one of these. And I'll let Jim continue in a second, but I want to mention one thing. He keeps saying, well, you don't do an 80-20, you don't do a 70-30, you don't do a 50-50, just blanket. I describe it as not doing it arbitrarily. Just saying, oh, you're such and such years old, your risk tolerance level because of this questionnaire is this, so we think you should be in a 70-30 or an 80-20 or whatever, and that's appropriate for you. That's arbitrary. Not completely, but very much arbitrary.
Well, not only is it arbitrary, Chris, it's simple and scalable, and unfortunately, it's what a lot of people push because of those reasons.
Right. But then if you take our approach and you actually break things down and you decide what's the purpose for this money, what's the purpose for that, when is this going to be spent, how safe does this need to be, how much risk could I take with this, when you then step back after you're done, it might turn out that you're in an 80-20 or a 70-30 or a 60-40, but the point I always make is it's for a reason. It's because we've figured out what this money needs to do for you. We didn't just say, oh, you're 65 years old, so you should be in 80-20. It might be kind of standard once you get done with it, but you'll know why. There's common sense behind it and justification behind it. Or in some cases, it'll be different than what you expected. It'll either be, it'll kind of drive you towards a bit of a safer or maybe slightly more risky allocation once you apply the sleeving or positioning approach that Jim's describing here.
Right. And that's excellent points. One thing, listeners, because we keep bopping back and forth between verbiage that we've created and verbiage the industry creates. Pie slices are essentially the same as what I'm saying, calling sleeves. Any advisor who's listening to this, who manages money with trading software like we use, will understand sleeves. Sleeves is an industry term, folks, for investment advisors, where they might have an overall portfolio of 60-40 they're managing for a person, but they want to tell their trading software, hey, here's our model portfolio for a 60-40, assign it to this person. However, out of their portfolio, we want to isolate certain assets and keep them from being part of this 60-40 when we click rebalance on our trading platform. So you don't want to have to go in as an investment advisor and manage everything individually for everyone every time you want to rebalance. So you program your trading software. This is very sophisticated software, folks. You're not getting this on your own at Vanguard. They're not going to give you the ability to do all this. But in trading software, we can go into a portfolio and isolate certain assets as what the trading software calls sleeves, like the sleeve of a shirt. It's separate from your body. Follow the logic. You take this little bit of your body, you put it through a sleeve of a shirt, and it's kind of by itself. So that's kind of how they came up with the verbiage sleeve. So in our office, if I talk to Scott, who does most of the trading in our practice, if I say, Scott, this particular client is going to be a 60-40, he's still in the accumulation phase, we're not doing much sleeve management, he knows, okay, the whole portfolio is probably going to be a moderate 60-40. But I could have the same person in an accumulation portfolio, and I say to him, Scott, this is going to be an accumulation 60-40. However, he wants a separate standalone sleeve of $200,000 in cash for a purchase he wants to do in 2 years. So Scott will know, okay, I'm going to put 80% of the portfolio in the 60-40, and our trading software will manage that 60-40, the 80% in 60-40, and rebalance it quarterly and do all that we do for us, but it'll never touch the 20%, Chris and listeners, in the cash sleeve. But it can all be in one portfolio. We don't have to break it out and open up a second account. We don't have to keep track of it separately. It's all being done for us within our trading software, and it allows us to track it, to name the sleeves, assign the correct assets. And that's very important when you start getting deeper into what I'm describing. We're describing a case. Anyway, so hopefully you all know why we say sleeves or pie slices. Pie slices is kind of the retail version, if you will, Chris, to describe visually what we do on the trading side with allocations and sleeves. Okay, so in our example, we have our listener folks who did admit to us he had $2.2 million broken up amongst three different style accounts. And what we're saying is he's wondering or doesn't like being restricted to a 4% safe withdrawal and one managed portfolio. Instead, he wants to see if he can spend more on the fun things earlier in life. That's essentially what he's asking. And he also wants to know why the industry didn't embrace that. So when it comes to managing your money in that situation, I said he had $2.2 million, but I pretended that he had $600,000 of needs on minimum dignity floor. Some of it was going to be spent over the first 10 years. Other was going to be spent in 22 years. Obviously, those two pie slices or sleeves in his trading portfolio, if he was doing it on his own, are going to have different allocations, different assets assigned to them. That's called asset liability mapping. We started talking about that on the past few podcasts. In our industry, it's called mapping. You are mapping your asset, or in our verbiage, your deferred spending, to the appropriate liability, or in our verbiage, the appropriate fund spending or purpose that it's being earmarked for. And initially, you are going to position assets into it and then buy different assets being mapped to the future spending that that sleeve or pie slice is being earmarked to. So hopefully that all makes sense to you. All what you're doing now is asset liability mapping, or deferred spending being mapped to the spending that asset is assigned to. So once you take care of your minimum dignity floor, and in my example, it was $600,000. And again, the gentleman started with $2.2 million, so he's down to what, $1.6 million now, Chris? Mm-hmm. Is my math right?
So far.
Perfect. Now, one of the things you have to do before you think, oh, I can go blow $1.6 million on fun, not so fast. What do you want to do about aging assistance? You got to ask yourself this. And as you position your portfolio, you need to figure this out. And aging assistance is two-pronged. What if you can't take care of your lifestyle, which is essentially a minimum dignity floor? Food, utilities, transportation, housing, and health care. What if you can't take care of that lifestyle anymore? Especially housing is where most people see it. What if you need to hire people to come take care of your landscape because you can't do it as much anymore? What if you need to hire someone to change the batteries in your smoke detector on top of your 12-foot ceiling, like mine are? I bring a 10-foot stepladder into the house. I go up on that stepladder quite high and change the battery. But I am not going to be doing that at 70, 75, 80. I'm going to have to hire someone. I don't have kids who I can hijack and tell come over here and do. I'm going to have to hire someone. Same thing with taking care of my lawn, maybe cleaning the house, maybe cooking some meals and freezing them for me. Things that you take for granted now, folks, as a healthy 50, 60-year-old, you may not be doing in your 80s and 90s. We have to make sure you reserve money for your lifestyle if you can't take care of that. And more importantly, what if you can't take care of yourself or your spouse? That's called long-term care in the industry. They call it long-term care planning. But what it is taking care of you or taking care of your lifestyle. How are you going to fund taking care of you? Are you going to reserve money and self-fund it? Well, you started with $2.2 million, but you really only have $1.6 million. If you're going to self-fund it, And depending on where you live, your health, how much you want to protect, do you want to protect a typical long-term care need, which would be 3 years or less, or an atypical long-term care need, which about 20% of people who live to 65 will need. It's not many, 20%, but what if you are that 20%? And that is a need that goes longer than 3 years. And God forbid, if you are one of the ones like Ronald Reagan or Glenn Campbell and got Alzheimer's or dementia, or one of them who get Parkinson's or a stroke or these other horrendous diseases that don't cause you to die, but instead to linger, and you could linger for 5, 8, 10, 12 years. My own Uncle Benny, I've talked about him a lot, not my real uncle, my father's first cousin, but we always called him Uncle Benny, has had Alzheimer's for going on 8 years now. It can last a while and cost a lot. So how are you going to cover that? Let's just say in my example, Chris, it's another $600,000 to cover his aging assistance needs. And you will come up with that with more of an analysis. Maybe we'll do an EDU show on how to come up with that. That might be a good thing. We'll try to get Greg to come on the show. Greg is an advisor who works for me. He's been working for us for about 2 years now, lives in North Carolina, and he does our aging assistance analysis in our office. He doesn't want to come on the podcast, though. Maybe I can trick him. Hey, come on the phone. Chris and I want to talk to you for a minute.
Yeah, and we'll just record
it. We're recording them. Talk clearly, Greg, but answer these questions for us. But he doesn't really want to come on the podcast, but maybe one day I can trick him to coming on. And he can walk you through how he comes up with how much money you need to reserve if you're going to self-fund. Or maybe you are going to transfer some of the risk through insurance, long-term care insurance. How do you pick the correct policy? What type of policy should you buy? How do you fund the premiums on that policy? These are all the things you have to address. Or are you going to ignore that? In our office, we call them ostriches. In a very, we don't mean it derogatorily. Did I say that right?
Derogatorily? Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the word.
Surprising.
We don't mean it in a mean way. We, you know how ostriches allegedly, I don't know if this is true or an urban legend, that they stick their head in the sand and they're just not going to worry about it. There are people who say to us, look, we are not going to worry about aging assistance. It's going to cause us to have to reduce our fund spending too much. We don't want to do it. We just call them ostriches. It's not a derogatory term, but it's to tell us as a firm, okay, that's their approach to aging assistance. Not many people take that approach, but some do. You have to ask yourself, what approach are you taking?
Yeah, because this creates its own sleeve then. That's how it
Correct.
Ties into the sleeve situation.
And then you have to manage, in my example, I said 600,000, you manage that differently. It's going to be depending. Is that $600,000 being used to generate earnings to use to fund premiums on a long-term care insurance policy? Or is this being used to fund the actual spending itself, where we're going to be reinvesting the earnings and trying to grow it? I mean, what is the aim of that $600,000? And then what is an appropriate mix of assets mapped to that spending need or liability? Remember, it's asset liability mapping is what you're doing. It's another cherry pie slice, another sleeve in your portfolio. Stop managing everything as one big ass portfolio, folks. That only works in accumulation. Now in distribution, you're positioning, you're lining it up. It's those little chocolate candies in the I Love Lucy episode. You got to line them up. Then you have to look at what we call guaranteed inheritance. Do you need to make sure a certain amount of your assets or a certain level of inheritance is received by a certain beneficiary or not? This, again, is emotionally driven decision that varies amongst people. Some people have special needs children that must inherit money. Other people tithe and guarantee and need to guarantee at least 10% of their assets and net worth go to their church. Others want to guarantee their grandkids get at least $50,000 for some reason, or their children get X amount. And other people say, nope, whatever is left can go to everyone else. I worked my entire life. I took care of my family and kids. It's time that my deferred spending, my assets, go to me. Everyone, Chris, is different. You'll agree there. But that could result in another pie slice of your cherry pie and essentially another sleeve. If we were managing or helping you manage your assets, we would say, okay, create another sleeve within our trading software, and we're going to allocate this asset and this asset and this asset. We would map the correct asset to that purpose, name that sleeve so we know what it's being used for. So if our client calls us and tells us, hey, take some of the guaranteed inheritance for my grandchild. I want to give it to them now. There's no need for me to wait until I die. We know, okay, we got to go to this sleeve. That's where we put the assets. It's marked grandchildren's inheritance in our trading software. That's the asset that we are going to debit. That's the asset that was mapped to that expense. See how it works, folks? And this is what you have to do. You do it yourselfers. Stop managing as one big portfolio. Stop being one of these AUM investment advisors and start being a true financial planner and breaking your portfolio up. And then after you took care of guaranteed inheritance, and let's just say our hypothetical person, Chris, wants to leave a $200,000 guaranteed inheritance. So now he's down to $800,000. He started with 2.2 million listeners, but we've mapped that 2.2 million of deferred spending to the appropriate liability or the appropriate spending task it's been assigned to. Minimum dignity floor delay period, minimum dignity floor post-delay period, aging assistance, guaranteed inheritance. What's the last item that needs to be sliced, Chris, from that pie before the final quote-unquote fund number is reached?
Well, again, this is another kind of optional and personal situation. Sometimes we encourage it more in certain circumstances than others, but it's what we call our buffer reserve, kind of the catch-all, just in case something that you can't even anticipate right now in the planning process, that you can't even imagine in your life would come up. Either you were wrong about something and it turns out you need it when you didn't think you needed it, or something you didn't even have planned for or factored in at all were to occur, kind of having this extra reserve or cash in the mattress, I sometimes call it, it could be appropriate. And you'll have to define that before you get to your final look at the rest of the cherry pie, which is your fund spending.
Exactly. So in my example, a hypothetical spending breakdown. He had 2.2 million. He's down to 800,000 in my breakdown of his assets. He's at the buffer phase. And let's say him and his wife decide, let's put 200,000 aside for a buffer, or what a lot of people call emergency reserve, if you will. If something happens, we can't even begin to imagine, we want that. Well, that's another sleeve, listener. Do you invest that buffer aggressively? Well, technically you shouldn't, because what if he needs it sooner rather than later? But do you put it in cash? No, I think that's a little ridiculous. So we have to come up with an appropriate reserve style account and map that 200,000 to it in my example. And that leaves him now, folks, with $600,000. He still has all his other assets, but you see, it's being mapped to different spending needs And each spending need or sleeve or pie slice, either verbiage, each one is going to have a different allocation. But now he's got $600,000 left for fun. And in our opinion, you can spend that $600,000 as fast or as slow as you want. That's the money we want you to die with a zero balance in. Because money left over in that sleeve or cherry pie slice is life unlived. You very well may die with the buffer. You definitely are going to die with the guaranteed inheritance because that's money you've passed on to someone else. You might die with the reserve money in your aging assistance pool if you never needed it. Or you might die with nothing in there if you needed it and spent it. You might die with some of the minimum dignity floor reserve or not. Depends how long you lived. So you may still pass away with assets. We don't consider that failure. Those assets were marked for a specific purpose that never happened. Aging assistance, minimum dignity floor, buffer. The inheritance one is definitely going to happen. That gets triggered at death. So that one always works out. However, if you die with fun money, that's life unlived. Now, the difficulty is how much of that $600,000 in our example gets spent during the go-go phase of fun spending. And how much do you want to reserve for the slow-go and the no-go? And the go-go, if you retire at 60, maybe your go-go phase is 10 years. And then from 70 to 80 is going to be your slow-go phase. And 80 through death is going to be your no-go phase. What percent do you want to spend during your go-go phase? We recommend 50 to 70% of that $600,000 should be spent in the go-go phase when you have the health, inclination, desire, and ability to go have fun. So that percent, let's just say it's 50% he chooses, so I can do the math in my head. I don't have my calculator with me today. So out of the $600,000 that's left, he wants to spend $300,000 of it right away, Chris, on fun. That $300,000, in my opinion, that's going in a cash sleeve. To hell with it. Put it all in a cash sleeve. It's there. Spend it. With impunity, irrespective of what the market is doing. But the $300,000 that's earmarked for the next 10 to 20 year period, some of that might be put in a conservative sleeve and some might be put in a moderate allocation sleeve. So here's three more sleeves, folks, on one $600,000 fun spending cherry pie. So when you're managing money in a distribution phase, if you're truly going to do it right for yourselves, or if you're an advisor and you truly want to do it right for your clients, this is what you need to be doing. And don't give me any more BS that, oh, you don't have to do that. Just take 4% out. It's real easy. That's why they do it that way, listener. Can you understand now, listener and listeners? What we do is labor intensive and requires work and is not nearly as scalable. Financial planning isn't scalable at all. Sleeves is still kind of scalable in the sense once we have our trading software programmed correctly and each asset in each sleeve mapped to the correct spending expense. It's scalable in the sense we can monitor it a lot easier. I admit this is going to be hard for y'all to do it on your own because you're not going to have software sophisticated as ours. So it's scalable for us. It's much more scalable than financial planning, but not nearly as scalable as if we were managing just one big portfolio, Chris, limiting our clients to a 4% withdrawal. But do you see, folks, now how you have to position and why it is not easy and scalable? And this is one of the reasons why investment advisors don't do this level of analysis. It doesn't match their business model. Their business model is keep things simple, collect assets, take 1% of it, or 1.5%, or 1.25%, or 0.8%, whatever they happen to be charging, take money from it, Chris, every year, put them in a model portfolio, tell them we're doing something phenomenal, and when they're retired, give them a retirement analysis that took us a few hours to create, but simply limits them to a quote-unquote safe withdrawal rate, apply a probability statistic greater than a certain percentage, and tell them you're all set for retirement. That's the industry, and they do it because it's scalable. But if you want to do it what we feel is the correct way, and granted, we are biased, and I know any investment advisors listening to this, you're going to hate us even more and give us more negative reviews on our podcast because you don't like what we're saying. But deep down, y'all know this is right. You know this is the correct way to do retirement. It's just not scalable, so you don't embrace it. Anyways, I'll get off my high horse now.
It's all good.
But that is his answer. He wanted to know. He asked the wrong person, me. Why does the industry do it this way? You know deep down, Chris, not even deep down, you know because you work with me. The industry doesn't do it this way because of the reasons I just explained.
Right. Yeah, it's hard. It takes a lot of effort. Now, one thing I will point out, if you're to kind of calm the do-it-yourselfers, there is a point where some of this becomes more calm, right? Or more simplistic. We started out, Jim described, I think, 8 sleeves here, right? 3 sleeves for the fund spending, a sleeve for guaranteed inheritance, a sleeve for aging-related expenses and long-term care, and a couple sleeves for minimum dignity floor. There can be some overlap sometimes. You could find 2 of these that could fit the same sleeve, essentially. So there could be a little bit of simplicity applied here if you happen to find 2 purposes that aligned perfectly in the same sleeve. But eventually you'll spend through some of these sleeves, right? You're going to spend the early delay period MDF, minimum dignity floor coverage. You're going to spend the go-go spending sleeve. So you'll naturally kind of exhaust some of these sleeves. And then your life will change over time, and you might dissolve some of the sleeves or adjust, release some money from some of the sleeves as your life evolves and you discover that you maybe don't need as much. You might embellish, kind of rebalance between the sleeves as things go. But you will most of the time reach kind of a steady state of almost autopilot. So it's not like you have to worry about this level of complexity into your 80s and 90s typically. This is really kind of trying to optimize your 60s and 70s for the most part, where you're really trying to give yourself the permission to spend a lot on your fun while you're young enough and healthy enough and have the inclination to do it. Once you kind of get past that, there aren't a lot of tax decisions to be made anymore. There's not a lot of management of the assets and sleeving decisions to be made anymore. So things do kind of calm down over time. But there is a period where you kind of got to be paying attention to a lot of moving parts here if you want to optimize, here's that word again, your retirement. If you're trying to get the maximum out of what you've saved, it's going to take a little bit of effort like this. I mean, if you have us do some of this stuff for you, that would reduce the burden on you. So that is a service that we provide. We do some of these things for people, right? We're kind of describing it in this level of detail. So if you wanted to try to do it yourself, you maybe could pull it off. But it's going to take a little effort. The easy way, right? 4% withdrawal rate, budget yourself for that. Don't exceed that and we'll all be good. We'll keep you within the 90% probability of success category. That might work, but that's not going to optimize things. If you want to optimize, it's going to take a little bit more attention, a little more planning, a little more effort in some cases. If you don't want to do it yourself, I mean, we do offer this. We don't just do the podcast, right? We do offer this. There'll be other people who do these kinds of things too. Not as many as you'll find that do the easy approach, right? They're everywhere. Everywhere does the safe withdrawal rate Monte Carlo. That's the buzzword for the past 20 years. Full-blown planning with sleeve management, managing your distributions, looking at the tax consequences every year of this, looking at the whole tax landscape and the tax strategy, folding that all into all of this. That's going to take some effort and some expertise, if you will. But it can pay off in maximizing what you're able to do in retirement which if you're listening to this, you've got some interest in that. If you weren't that interested, you wouldn't be listening to a goofy podcast like we have. If you're listening to this, you're trying to get the most out of your retirement. We're proposing a way to do that.
Exactly. And a couple of things I want to add to that is Chris is right. And I often will counsel with people who we're working with that the number of sleeves and the complexity does diminish as you age. But what else diminishes, folks, as you age? Your ability to understand financial concepts. So Chris is right. You may have less sleeves as you get into your 80s and 90s, and all tax planning has probably been optimized and you're kind of on autopilot. But your ability to understand asset management, your ability to do it, is going to be diminished greatly. Don't forget that. And it's part of the reason you do need, I know you do it yourselfers are loathe to hire someone. And I question the value that most AUM advisors provide during the accumulation phase and definitely during the distribution phase. Some of them do provide good advisor alpha, and you might get something worthy of 1%, 1.5%, 1.25% of your assets. Or sadly, 1% of your assets may be 20, 25, 30% of your actual return. Keep that in mind. But some advisors may add alpha of value, but I feel few do. And the best way to optimize asset management is keep your fees low, keep your portfolios well diversified, embrace a passive approach, and that can probably add more in alpha. But in a distribution phase, the best an advisor can be doing to quote unquote add alpha isn't necessarily managing your money. It's mapping your assets to the correct liability, creating sleeves, taking care of that for you, handling your distributions, but also looking at the tax implication of every distribution. Especially in this client's case, listener's case, which we didn't even get into and we can't in this podcast, I got to wrap it up. But this guy has, remember Chris, some tax diversification. He had, I forget how much he had. Where is his email? Oh, yeah, my computer.
Essentially, so he had some choices to make in where he draws money out of these accounts from a tax.
$185,000 in Roth, $460,000 in brokerage, and $1.66 million in always taxable. So he has tax diversification. I think an advisor can add more value for a retiree by managing sleeves, positioning the assets, and optimizing every withdrawal from a tax standpoint. When it comes time for withdrawal, what should come out of the always taxable account? What should come out of the maybe taxable account? And in the maybe taxable account, what assets should I be selling from a tax standpoint? Should anything come from the Roth account, perhaps to keep me from hitting an IRMA limit or getting an ACA credit? Or to keep me from going into another tax bracket where my effective marginal rate is going to go from 11% maybe to 32%. An advisor can add far more in alpha, Chris, watching those than they're ever going to add in allegedly managing your money better than you can. Y'all have amassed millions. You know that. Or you're on your way to amassing millions. You just haven't done it yet. If you're listening to this podcast, you're Vanguardian do-it-yourselfers. You're halfway there to my philosophy. You're keeping things simple, low cost, diversified, passive. Great. You're probably going to get a better return than hiring someone. But when it comes to distribution planning, I think what you should really be looking for if you're going to work with an advisor, and this is going out to the emailer, he's saying he's thinking of switching, And you don't have to hire us. I know Chris mentioned that we do this, but he also is going to mention to you, or I will, you don't have to hire us. It's not why we do this podcast. But yes, we are available, but you can try to find someone else. But to me, Chris, in a distribution portfolio, you hire someone. That's why we call out asset management services, folks. And I know we don't talk about this much on the podcast at all. We call it convenience portfolios. I don't tell you I'm going to manage your assets. I'm going to manage your life. I'm going to manage your retirement. I'm going to help you position your assets to the liability. I'm going to create the sleeves for you. I'm going to make sure the correct sleeve gets debited for the correct need. But we're going to also look at your withdrawals from a tax standpoint. And what accounts should you take it from? And how much should come from each account? We can't do that unless we're managing the assets. That's why I don't talk about it much on the podcast, because we don't require our clients to hire us to manage their assets. But those who do, one of the services or the reason, you don't hire me to manage your assets. I'm not going to do any better than what you're mapping your portfolio to your own passive approach is going to do. Because we do passive management in our approach. We have some active sleeves that we do use. I won't get into that. But we also embrace passive, low cost, well diversified. We'll talk on another podcast, our philosophy on that. Maybe we'll get Travis to come on, the CFA who works for us out of Cummings, Georgia, how he designs our portfolios. But the true value, the true alpha, is the convenience of not only doing the due diligence of managing your assets and making sure the ETFs and the passive holdings are correct and mapped to the right assets, but getting the sleeves in place, making sure the distributions come from the correct sleeve, keeping track of what asset is in what sleeve and what that sleeve is earmarked to, but also paying attention, Chris, to every discretionary withdrawal above and beyond what you need to take out or have to take out for required minimum distributions. What are the correct accounts to debit from, and what are the correct assets to sell within the maybe taxable account? That's what your advisor should be doing for you, Houston listener. And if he or she, I think you said it was a he, if he's not doing that, what the hell are you paying for? That's my take. Okay. Enough of that, or I can keep going on this one.
No, I think we tied that one up. It took us two shows to do it, but I think we tied that email up pretty well and gave you some sense for how to look at things from a, trying to improve your situation, not just avoid failure. But thanks for everybody listening again this week.
Yeah, hopefully I gave them, or you gave them, because you did a lot of talking too, maybe not as passionately as I do it. But hopefully we gave them, Chris, food for thought. What it takes to manage a distribution portfolio. If you're going to listen to any eight podcasts of ours, listen to the five we did in January and February on our approach to retirement planning and why. Two of them were on why, three of them were on how. Listen to those. Listen to one we did, and I can't remember when we did it, Chris, if it was 2018 or 2019. The one we called The Opposite. And we play a little snippet from Seinfeld in it. That show talks about why retirement planning, distribution planning, is the opposite of everything you ever knew in accumulation. And then listen to these two podcasts. Those eight, the two we just did on why Monte Carlo is used and how you need to start looking at distribution planning. And then again, the five on our process and the one on the opposite. I think if you listen to those eight, Chris, as a do-it-yourselfer, you're going to get a good idea, not about why we do what we do and stuff like that, but a good idea of what you, as a do-it-yourselfer, need to be doing. So anyways, just wanted to throw that out there.
Perfect. Well, if you want to learn a little more about us or send us a suggestion for an EDU show or send in a simple question for our Q&A podcast that you can pick up on your the same podcast supplier that you're listening to this show on, go to our website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. From there, you can submit a question or comment through the comment form there, the feedback form that we have. You can send Jim an email directly to jim@jimhelps.com. A lot of people send questions that way. But the website's got some information about us, what we do, what we offer, our backgrounds, lots of stuff. Pretty pictures as well. Have all those nice mountain, your hiking pictures are on there. So it's very Colorado.
No, every single outdoor picture on that website was taken by yours truly on one of his hikes.
Very nice. So
I figured I'd throw that out there.
Yeah, perfect. So you have a good weekend, Jim. Thanks for calling in.
Perfect. And, I will chat with everybody next week. Everybody have a great, well, by the time you listen to this, it may not be weekend, but thanks for listening, and we will talk to you again.
Sounds good.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.